Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Well, welcome again here for our final segment on Circles of Change. I thank everyone, a busy holiday to be with us. We're going to talk about the ups and downs of technology with a very interesting gentleman, David Milgram from Massachusetts. How are you this morning, David?
Good, Zara. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure. Well, let me give this introduction. I think I've whetted everyone's whistle early in the show. David has created 25 books for children since 1993. He's both the illustrator and the author. And his latest book, Goodnight iPad, is a modern-day parody of the beloved, brilliant Goodnight Moon. Written under the pseudonym of Android, Goodnight iPad is David's first book that's published by an adult publishing firm. And though originally conceived for children, the book has developed into a project that finds an audience with all ages. And it's currently on both the New York Times and the Los Angeles Times bestseller list, and it's really struck a chord with those of us who rarely find ourselves far from one kind of electronic gadget to another. David is an IRA CBC Children's Choice winner, and his other books include See Auto, Ride Auto Ride, See Pip Point, See Santa Nap, My Friend Lucky, Here in Space, Dog Brain, which of course I still have a copy of, David, even though our kids are 17 and 14, and Cows Can't Fly. As I said, he lives in Northampton, Massachusetts with his wife, Kyra, and their son, Wyatt. Well, congratulations. You've got to start us with a discussion on David or Android, the whole concept for writing this book, Goodnight iPad.
The concept for it came originally from my agent, who was sitting on a manuscript she had written called Goodnight iPhone.
Okay.
So very similar. And she had passed it on to me, and it sat on my desk for a while, and then some inspiration hit me, and I rewrote it and sent it back to her, and she started to send it around. I had rewritten it and called it Goodnight Gadgets, staying away from the brand name.
Right.
And a number of children's publishers looked at it, including the children's division at Penguin, where the book is, and as well as I think she sent it to HarperCollins that did the original Goodnight Moon. So it went around to a few places, and then ended up in the hands of someone she knew and who had just started his own imprint in adult publishing. It's David Rosenthal at Blue Writer Press. And he liked it and immediately said it really needed to have the name brands in it. So that word came back to me, and not only in the title, but throughout the book. His suggestion was Goodnight iPad. And I rewrote it with all of those name brands in there, which really gives it the flavor that it has now. And I think makes it very, it makes it funnier and more striking and certainly very now.
Now, did you, because of using the name iPad and the brand related, is that something you had to request permission to be able to use?
We didn't. I did not realize you could do that, even when my agent first gave it to me. But as it turns out, because it's a parody,
yes,
those name brands are okay. There's no trademark infringement, and nobody would mistake the book for an iPad or something like that. So I guess it's legal. We ran it by a lawyer. The lawyers at the publisher looked at it. There's many precedents for it, but I seem fine. So far, no lawsuits.
And I was going to ask you, so since that time, you actually have two places you might think you'd be getting it from, and that would be, I assume, the trust that owns the rights to the original book, Goodnight Moon, because that book's from the 40s, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. The 40s. And again, for our listeners who may not know that book, it is the classic one that it's when you start reading it to your child, they don't let you read it just once. You have to read it three or four times, it seems like. And before you know it, as a parent, you've got it committed to memory, and at least they do. So if you ever try to skip a page, they always say, no, 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 Mom, you forgot to say, and they parrot the line right back to you, don't they?
Yeah, I've read that book quite a few times with my own son.
and who's now 10, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
So we're not reading it anymore.
But. You're not reading it quite yet. Well, in fact, it's not just you have one copy in your household. You usually need three or four, because heaven help you if you can't find the one copy, because then they won't go to bed.
Plus, people give it to you. We have maybe three copies, a board book and a couple of picture book copies.
And so, David, your role as both the writer of the story and hallucinating in the pseudonym, but then also the illustrating, the fact that you have your whimsical bunny and the other characters that resound, but yet still there's a little bit close association with some of the artwork that was done in the original book.
Yeah, I took the bunnies right out of the original book, of course. And when we first showed it to the legal department through Blue Rider Press, they requested me to change the palette a little bit. So the book was closer to the palette in Goodnight Moon originally, but they wanted to make absolutely sure there was no mistaking this for the original. So I changed the green to the blue. The rest of it remained the same. You know, to me, it's very much a tip of the hat to Goodnight Moon.
It is, very much so. And would you care, please, to perhaps read a segment of it or tell our audience really the general messaging you're trying to offer?
You know, I don't have it in front of me. I should have. It starts out in the bright, buzzing room. There was an iPad and a kid playing Doom and a screensaver of, and then you turn the page, a bird launching over the moon, I think it is, and it's the Angry Bird.
The Angry Bird game, of course.
There were three little nooks with 10,000 books, and there's a guy sitting there in front of empty shelves, just the nooks on it.
And it goes from there. So really the message you're telling us, and I think is this whole idea of even what we said, the title for our segment is The Ups and Downs of Technology. You know, obviously technology is an enabler for everything you do for your career, but yet on the flip side, I know you and your wife have chosen to homeschool your son, and so the idea of family and community is still so important, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very much. The story arc in the book is that you see the house filled with gadgets. Everybody's on one kind of electronic gadget or another, until the little old lady who in Goodnight Moon is whispering hush in this book is trying to sleep. And she starts to confiscate everybody's gadgets. Of course, they don't like it. And she takes them all and throws them out the window. And as she throws them out the window, the room gets progressively darker and darker, similar to the way in Goodnight Moon, the room gets darker and darker, until all the gadgets are gone and everybody's sleeping, except for one little bunny who sneaks a flashlight and an actual copy of Goodnight Moon to read while everybody else is asleep.
It's a charming, charming story. But I think you're right. I think that's our message here to our listeners, and really the message behind the book is this idea of really needing to unplug.
Yeah. It's somebody asked me in an interview whether I thought we were too wired and kids are too wired. And my answer is kind of obviously yes. We're too wired. And at the same time, we're not really too wired. A lot comes down to personal choices. You know, you can't not be as wired as we are, but still have all the other things that technology brings us. It all sort of comes together at one, as, you know, it comes together. So it just becomes important to make decisions as you move along about how you're going to spend your time and how and in what way you're going to use the technology.
Well, you know, I couldn't agree with you more. However, there's one additional challenge, though, for those of us our parents, is when our young people perhaps aren't old enough yet to make some of those decisions and choices, then how do we navigate that process and guide them in that process, right? So, for example, I was at the airport last week, and I watched a young mother with her rambunctious, couldn't have been more than 2 years old. And what she kept doing was putting the little one in front of the iPad, in front of that iPad, having him touch things. And I thought to myself, oh, dear, the days of could you have a little bag of crayons, you know, or little thing of Tinker Toys or whatever it might be as an alternative to always have nose to screen.
It's true, and it is a challenge. And the challenge in our house is still so great that we make a point to regulate how much screen time our son has, going as far as to require that he do an equivalent amount of exercise for the amount or active time for the amount of time that he spends playing games on the computer. And when it comes to bedtime, it's very difficult to like bring an iPad into the bed and look at it with him, because that iPad is a window, it's a gateway into a deep world that he already has exposure to. So he, and even the younger kids, they want to press the buttons, they want to do things, they want it to react to them. And it's very tough to stop that and say, hey, let's concentrate on just this story in this one book or app that we're looking at. It's almost an impossibility. You know, as to the coloring, I mean, my gut, my first reaction is, yes, sorry, you're completely right. Like, what about coloring? What about playing outside? What about being bored? What about learning to structure your own time? I mean, you know, those are all things I grew up with. But they're things that have been lost before the iPad, or have been waning before the iPad. There's a lot of structure in kids' lives already. They don't have so much time to just structure on their own, or to be bored, or to find their own amusements. But aside from all that, I also have a side of me that says, you know, I don't know where this is leading. You know, maybe the coloring will be done on the iPad. Maybe the coloring will be done in a three-dimensional medium that's around you, that, you know, like Legos of today are much cooler than Legos when I was a kid. You know, maybe things will get cooler, maybe, but the kids will still create. You know, I see a lot of Lego play, and because the Legos come pre-made to certain, you know, even licensed characters, does not actually take the creativity away from the kids. I see them making their own things still, but they have many more parts, many more examples and ideas. I don't see that creativity has been lost in it.
It's just so different. It's just
it's
different.
It's just different. And maybe that's what's happening. It's impossible to gain a perspective from the moment.
Well, particularly because those moments are changing on us so fast. David, so you've got Goodnight iPad out there, and of course I referenced in our introduction the 25 other books as you've written. Perhaps you can tell us about maybe the journalistic and the artistic journey of a couple of those. Maybe your first book, or the one that really surprised you that the market took off on. Tell us another story in that space.
I should probably talk about the most recent ones, but the ones that I love the most, that are closest to me, one is called Cows Can't Fly that you mentioned, and another one, Here in Space, which is no longer available. Here in Space is a very simple rhyming text about a boy, but the concept is that even though we are here on Earth, we're actually, in some sense, living in outer space. We don't have to get on a rocket and go to another place. This right here is what it feels like to be living in space. So that cool air on a, you know, when, in the evening when you're standing on the beach looking at the stars, you know, we're in space. We're on a planet in space. So it's a simple idea. One, I think we don't necessarily think of that way. And so that book was great. I had that sense, I think, in my 20s. I remember having that thought. And that book was well-received. Some places picked it up. I actually was on CNN with that. And the New York Times reviewed it and things like that. Cows Can't Fly is Cows Can't Fly, But I Don't Care. One Day I Drew Some in the Air. Well, that's absurd, my father said. Why don't you draw some birds instead? And the father's, you know, kind of steering him towards the practical or the realistic. Sure. But the kid says he doesn't care. He's drawing the cows. And a wind comes and takes the page, and it blows away. And he says, look, my cows are flying, as the page flies away. But they land in a field, and some actual cows see it. And then the next thing he knows, to his surprise, some flying cows came flying by or something like that.
Yeah.
And he runs to tell everybody about the cows, but everyone's too busy or doesn't believe him. The teacher says, you know, facts are facts, you know, cows can't fly and that is that or something. And, you know, nobody will believe him, but he stays true to his own vision. And and just enjoys them on his own.
And I'm, let me ask that metaphor, is that any of you and your own soul speaking? I mean, the whole decision you made in your life to dedicate it to art and to children's literature and so on?
I think it is. I hadn't been aware of it at the time, but it also is a dream I've had. I've had this repeating dream where there'd be something like five moons in the sky, and I go to tell people. I think it's, like, very exciting, and nobody's interested.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody seems to get it. But yeah, in a practical matter, I think it is. I think going into art and trying to make a career as a writer and an illustrator, I wasn't something that my family was used to, and not something that was really supported. So, in a big way, I went in the face of others' opinions, I guess.
Yeah, but in the meantime, though, in fact, I think I'd read something, or you wrote me, that this idea of trying to be practical but in an impractical way.
Yeah. I looked at the notes I wrote you, and I was wondering what it was exactly I meant. I think that, like, if you're going to become an artist, a lot of people are going to say that's an impractical thing. Writer, artist, musician, dancer, poet, whatever. You're going to get a lot of opinions that it's impractical. Now, of course, there are people that make careers in these things, so some people make it through. But given the fact that you're going to say, okay, I'm going to give it a try. I want to give it a try even though people tell me it's impractical. There's still a lot of practicalities about the pursuit to consider and how you spend your time, where you're going to get the money that you're not earning in the career, how many years you're going to give it, how you're going to support it, how you're going to get to the actual work that matters, what kind of space you need, when during the day feels right for you to do it, and then structuring your life around these things. There's a ton of practical decisions. I think the idea that because it's an impractical pursuit, we should act illogically or impractically, I don't think is in our service.
Not at all. But the other challenge, though, is that the whole creativity space, for most, even most prolific artists, still is a nonlinear process. Or do you find for you, Dave, that your best ideas come in the morning or on Wednesdays or after you've had a walk on the beach?
I think you're right. It's a nonlinear process. And having just said everything I said, I think it could be very practical to be completely impractical.
There you go.
It's a really tough thing to advise. I keep wondering what I'll do if my son wants to pursue the arts. I imagine I'll support him in that. But, it's one thing to want it for yourself. It's another thing when your children want it. And even though I'm in it, it just takes a shifting of attitudes, I guess.
Well, and also surrounding yourself with the right kind of people that you do come to rely upon for advice, right? Just like you picked up on that great idea because an editor put something in front of you or an agent did. And so you weren't, you weren't closed-minded to know that not all the ideas need to come from within.
Yeah, it's true. And it's interesting because this book, mostly I sit and create on my own, but this book was my agent's idea and shaped very much by the publisher.
Yeah, interesting. So, well, one thing you said, though, is just even this segment, you said, the decision to become an artist. And I guess I would even challenge you with that is it's not something you become, it's something you are. It's something you've been for a long, long time. And I can say you and I've chatted, my son's about to go off to art school next fall, and there's no question, I've known since he was a little guy drawing little cartoons, and in fact his Latin notes from middle school are much more valuable because they've got his cartoons embedded in them than actually probably his having studied Latin. So it's what you are. And then how you've made a life to allow who you are to be what it is, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I think that does make sense. When I say to become an artist, I guess I mean to bring that directly into an artistic career.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
From what you're saying, your point of view, we all have creativity inside of us. A lot of people get it drowned out and they think they don't have it, but I don't really believe it. Of course, some have maybe more than others.
Okay.
But And some people have a lot, and they must do things in their way. They must bring their creativity to life. And a lot of times that means to market. And that can happen in an awful lot of ways. You know, you can take a camera and start making, films and then try to get those films recognized. You can also go out and become a production assistant and work your way up through the business that way and try to still do your work and address it, try to get it seen from within the industry. There's many different ways that it can be approached.
And in fact, I'd even say the ups and downs of technology, that this would be one of the ups, because you can have an artist and illustrator like yourself living in a charming town like Northampton, Massachusetts, being featured in YouTube connections and internet connectivity now in this day and age to further your career. Well, David Milgram, thank you so very much for giving your time today. For our listeners interested, you can go to www.davidmilgram.com. And of course, his new book, Goodnight iPad, written by Anne Droid. And so that's really David. David, have a happiest of holiday seasons, and we'll watch for book number 26 and then some to come.
Okay, thanks so much, Sarah.
You bet. It's a real pleasure. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, 877-544-2580.